Although the crypto assets and equity markets show little correlation pre-COVID, now they have become much more strongly correlated since 2020. They are no longer on the fringe of the financial system. I think that's an important finding of the analysis. So increase and growing interconnectedness between the two asset classes. That could facilitate the transmission of shocks and could be destabilizing for financial markets.
Welcome to another episode of FinTech Forward, the IMF podcast series that focuses on financial technology and draws from the expertise of the IMF Monetary and Capital Markets Department.
Today, we will focus on the latest research on fintech and the associated policy recommendations in the IMF's flagship Global Financial Stability Report, or GFSR for short. My name is Tara Iyer, and I'm an economist in the Monetary and Capital Markets Department. The GFSR is an important vehicle for the IMF to survey global financial conditions and provide advice to our member countries. This episode features Fabio Natalucci, Deputy Director of the IMF's Monetary and Capital Markets Department. Fabio heads our work on the GFSR. Hi, Fabio, and thank you so much for featuring in this episode on fintech in the GFSR.
First of all, thank you for having me on the series. So it's a pleasure to be here. So I oversee the Financial Stability Report, so one of the flagship of the fund, and the IMF Global Financial Markets Monitor. So we have staff all over the world to follow global markets. And then over the last couple of years, so I've been also looking into sustainable finance issues, so the financing side of climate change.
That's absolutely fascinating. We look forward to having you here. To start with, could you please tell us what the GFSR is and the role it plays in advising our member countries?
So the Global Financial Stability Report is one of the IMF flagship surveillance, particularly focused on global financial stability issue. It's published twice a year, and the idea is to identify financial stability risk and vulnerabilities while monitoring emerging trends in global financial markets. So we set up a framework where we try to separate shocks. Those could be anything, right? From a financial shock like the GFC to COVID to a war, separate from the impact on financial condition indices, which we can track and we produce in-house. And then look at vulnerabilities, both like asset price misalignment as well as a number of structural vulnerabilities like leverage, liquidity. Those are like amplifier of the shock. And then we produce what we call growth at risk, which is the distribution essentially of world GDP 1 year ahead or 3 years ahead. That is accompanied by a more detailed analysis of market conditions. So we look at pricing, issuance, we do deep dives into specific issues. And then that's what we call the chapter one of the GFSR. Then we have two analytical thematic chapters that look specifically at issues that might be relevant, whether these are climate, whether these are non-bank financial institutions. So we have a number of those. And then the last part, which is relevant for the fund, we look at policy recommendations. So we try to have policy recommendation related to financial stability risk or specific issue. This, I think, is particularly important because one of the job here is obviously advising our member countries. And so we provide specific tailored recommendation related to financial stability, risk, and vulnerabilities.
Thank you, Fabio. As part of the GFSR, you know, I agree it's a very important product in surveillance. And it would be great to hear you talk about more of fintech in the GFSR. So has the GFSR analyzed fintech before, and what topics has it focused on in this space?
So the GFSR has looked at financial stability risk arising from various segments of the financial sector over the past few years. So we look at role of leverage, we look at climate change, whether this is physical risk and equity prices or investment fund and climate. We look at the nexus between banks and sovereign EMs, crypto assets, and the rapid growth of fintech. So the last couple of GFSR in particular had two chapters that are related to this. So in the October 2021, we look at the crypto ecosystem and financial stability challenges. We know that crypto ecosystem has grown rapidly. There are both opportunities and challenges. And so the chapter look at the ecosystem, looking in particular at the financial stability challenges posed for emerging markets, right? So crypto assets come various different flavors. They evolve over time to meet the various needs for investment, store of value, currency conversion, payments. Look also at decentralized finance, so DeFi, which is gaining momentum by offering new services. The crypto ecosystem poses a number of challenges. In particular, there are operational and financial integrity risks from crypto asset provider. issue related to data availability and cross-border activities. There are investor protection risks. There are stability and inadequate reserve and disclosure for some stable coin. And then also there are macro financial issues, like what we call cryptoization in emerging market. So our overall, the assessment that came out of the chapter is that financial stability risks are not systemic yet, and I want to stress the word yet, but they should be closely monitored, given that there are global implications, and particularly because the operation and regulatory framework in some jurisdictions may be inadequate. That was the October 2021. Then we had in April of this year, so 2022, we had another chapter focusing on the growth of fintech, particularly vulnerability and challenges for financial stability. So fintech here means technological innovation in financial activities. It's important. It can reduce costs and friction, can increase efficiency, competition, and also can broaden the access to financial services. The chapter focuses on vulnerability and financial stability implication from this fintech and how those have accelerated through the COVID-19 pandemic. There are obviously, the growth seems to be at times concentrated in risky segment. And so that concentration combined with, in some cases, inadequate regulation, supervision can give rise to systemic risk and potentially financial stability implication. So that's as far as the GFSR, right? Then we obviously, we do more work on these issues. So we have started a new series that we call Global Financial Stability Notes, where we do more deep dive on analytical or shorter format, but analytical issues, in particular segment of the financial sector where we think some of this financial stability risk may be arising, and focusing on financial stability issues. So just to give you an example, we recently issued a GFSN, or Global Financial Stability Note, that found evidence of increased interconnectedness and spillover between crypto assets and equity markets. And that stays in stark contrast to what we see pre-COVID, era where crypto assets were still much smaller.
Thanks, Fabio. You mentioned cryptoization. What's the connection with dollarization?
So effectively what we do, we look at the adoption of these crypto assets in some emerging markets, and essentially they substitute for local currency, right? So the adoption of this crypto asset may introduce some of the issue that we see, for example, with dollarization in terms of like impact on the banking system, in terms of impact for financial stability and monetary policy transmission, and also in terms of like what implication there are for macro financial channel and transmissions.
Thanks, Fabio. Could you tell us maybe a little bit more about crypto and DeFi work and some of the policy conclusions really from this research?
So the chapter focuses on a few examples of fintech, right? So one of them is neobanks, right? So neobanks, those are branchless digital banks that acquire and serve customers through websites and mobile apps. So they tend to target financially underserved clients, so younger or lower income or riskier borrowers, by offering services like deposit and granting them loans, they are mostly unsecured. They have grown in size and probably in systemic importance in some markets. And so we found essentially in our analysis three main vulnerabilities. One, there is higher risk taking in retail loan originations without appropriate provisioning and underpricing of credit risk. The second risk is higher risk taking in their securities portfolio. And finally, inadequate liquidity management framework in terms of new banks. Then the other part of the chapter focused on fintechs in US mortgage markets. That was like a case study. We found that fintech firms not only take on risk themselves, but also put pressure on incumbents, right? So firms that are already there and provide mortgages. And the analysis provides some evidence of a negative impact on competitive pressure from fintech on the income of traditional bank. And then finally, we look at DeFi or decentralized finance. Those are based on crypto asset. Particularly, it's a form of financial intermediation based on crypto asset that experienced extraordinary growth over the past 2 years, offering potentially higher efficiency and investment opportunities. But it's also increasingly interconnected to the financial, to traditional financial intermediaries. So the size is still small. And despite that, I think under-regulated DeFi could pose market liquidity and cyber risk against a backdrop of legal uncertainty. So we have seen in the last few months significant strain in this market. Now, in terms of policy recommendation, I think one of this is about regulatory arbitrage, right? There is an increased interconnectedness between unregulated fintech entities and traditional banks. So there is a need for policy that include regulation of fintech alongside traditional banks. In terms of neobanks, I think the policy recommendation is that more robust capital, liquidity, operational risk management requirements commensurate to the risk they pose are desirable. And then in terms of DeFi, the absence of centralized entities governing DeFi is a challenge to regulation, right? There's nothing centralized that you can go after if you want or you can focus on. So regulation should focus on elements of the crypto asset ecosystem that actually enable DeFi, right? So for example, stablecoin issuers or centralized exchanges. So authorities should encourage DeFi platform to be subject to robust governance schemes, industry code and self-regulation. Now, you mentioned before cryptoization, and again, just to be clear, cryptoization is a situation where people start using crypto assets instead of their national currency, can be driven by a number of factors. There are obviously cross-border implications of this, so an approach that focuses on cross-border collaboration is important to address technological, legal, institutional, regulatory, supervisory challenge. One thing that I want to highlight, because there are these cross-border implications, it's important that policymakers implement global standard for crypto assets, right? So that would be enhancing their ability to monitor the crypto ecosystem, for example, addressing data gaps. In terms of stable coins, as they grow, regulations should be corresponding to the risk they pose and the economic function they perform. And then finally, in terms of cryptoization for emerging markets, obviously emerging markets should strengthen their macroeconomic policies and possibly consider the benefits of central bank digital currencies.
Yeah, thanks. That's very interesting. So as you mentioned, you know, crypto assets, and as we've seen really over the past couple of years and the decade before that, have grown to be quite speculative products. Could you tell us a bit more of the policy conclusions from the GFSN you mentioned on spillovers between the crypto and equity markets?
Yeah, so just to put some content on the analysis, the analysis here looked at the global financial stability, looked at the extent of interconnectedness and potential benefits for spillover between crypto assets and financial markets, global financial markets, right? Focusing particularly on equity markets in the US and emerging markets. So the question was, one, whether crypto and equity market volatility return were correlated. Second, if so, whether those correlations had increased over time. And finally, do crypto and equity market movements spill over to each other? So what the analysis found is that although the crypto and equity markets show little correlation pre-COVID, now they have become much more strongly correlated since 2020. Importantly, volatility in the crypto market spillovers over to the equity market and vice versa. So it's a two-direction flows, and this spillover actually have increased and increased in times of stress in markets. Now, of course, we need to do more work to pin down the exact channels, but I think one key mechanism that seems to be playing a role here, particularly during times of stress, is leverage buyers, right? They place bets on crypto. They could be subsequent fire sale on portfolio liquidated during times of stress. And so this could be one interpretation, is that because retail and institutional investors are increasingly playing a position in both crypto and equity markets, right? So linking more of the two markets. Now, they are no longer on the fringe of the financial system. I think that's an important finding of the analysis. So increase and sizable commitments and spillover between crypto and equity markets, this is the point, right? Growing interconnectedness between the two asset classes. That could facilitate the transmission of shock and in principle could be destabilizing for financial markets.
Yeah, thanks, Fabio. That sounds very interesting on this growing interconnectedness between these crypto and equity markets. Instead of switching topics, you know, some of the other topics that, you know, you had, which is, you know, sustainable finance, we hear that the IMF is doing a lot of work on the economic implications of climate change and the transition to a low carbon economy. Could you tell us a bit more about the role that fintech plays in this?
Yeah, so at this point, I think the transition to low greenhouse gas economy is the only path forward to avoid widespread irreversible damage to the planet, right? I think we have seen just in Europe this summer where the temperature are. So I think this is quite obvious at this point. But it does demand an important deep economic transformation, right? That in part require also mobilization of private equity at large scale as fast as possible, ideally at least. Now, the financial system, the global financial system, can play a crucial role in catalyzing private investment and accelerating this transition. Sustainability consideration around environment, social, governance, what we call ESG concern, have become increasingly embedded in investment strategies, philosophy, boosting what we call sustainable finance. The October 2021 GFSR last year looked at the role of the investment fund in particular can play in supporting the transition, and we find a number of benefits. For example, climate team funds have grown significantly over the last year. At the same time, they also remain small. Perhaps they are too small to make a tangible difference to the transition. There are also a source of financial stability risk, right? Particularly if the transition is abrupt, it's uncoordinated, that could trigger a rapid shift in investor and consumer behavior, right? So think of, for example, possible setbacks and risks coming from the Russian invasion of Ukraine, right? In terms of going back to coal, in terms of having to redirect the sources of gas, for example. So there could be some of this setback, but this is also possibly an opportunity to accelerate the transition toward renewable. The question is whether this transition will be more costly. Think of a higher commodity prices, issuing having access to some of the minerals, whether this could be more complex and particularly more disorderly. I think that would be the point that links to financial stability risk. Now, how do we foster sustainable finance? How do we mitigate financial stability risk, and what role fintech can play? I think in terms of fostering sustainable finance, there are three crucial steps. One is to strengthen what we have called the global climate information architecture. So data, disclosure, and classification. Number two, ensure proper regulatory oversight to prevent what is called greenwashing. So selling a product that you think is green when in fact it's not much green. And also conduct stress scenario analysis, particularly when we think about investment fund sector, not only the banking sector. Now, why I said technology can play an important role? I think, for example, thinking about data, right? So the Bridging the Data Gap networks on the workstream of the Network for Green, the financial system. So this is a workstream that I co-chair with the ECB and just issued its final report. One of the highlights of that report is that there are tools such as machine learning, artificial intelligence, that can be used to fill data gaps by making some of this scattered information, making them more available to a broader set to the public in a more structured format. And then the other piece of this, of the fintech, is that there is, in fact, an increasing number of fintech firms that are looking how to use technology to tackle some of the challenges in green and sustainable finance. Just to give an example, the G20 Tech Sprint in 2021, that was a sort of like hackathon-style competition that was launched under the Italian G20 presidency. That showed a number of promising initiatives aiming to solve problems like collection, verification, sharing of data, analysis, assessment of climate-related risk, as well as connecting project with investor. Now, the winners of that competition, there are three winners. One was a portal for corporates, investor, and credit institution to measure alignment with the European green taxonomy. One was a climate risk analysis suite of products. And the third one was a platform that would connect funding needs for green home improvements with investors. So I think that to close this point is new technologies and fintech in particular can be and play an important role in an effort to lever up private finance and address some of these climate challenges that we all face.
Wow, how absolutely fascinating that is, connecting climate finance with fintech. So thank you so much, Fabio, for your very interesting insights, and we look forward to the next time.
Yep, thank you for having me.
That was Tara Iyer speaking with Fabio Natalucci, Deputy Director in the Monetary and Capital Markets Department, in the third episode of FinTech Forward, the IMF special five-part series with a focus on all things fintech. Look for it and all the other IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.